If you're like me, you probably have a relatively high percentage of THC floating through your bloodstream, which means you're constantly losing your keys, your phone, maybe even your cat, but lose nothing anymore except your heart to the sweet technological messiahs over at thetracker.com. The Tracker, it's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You put it on whatever you tend to lose, keys, wallet, your shoes, whatever it is, it's small enough to fit anywhere. When you misplace an item that has a tracker pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. Lose your phone? Just press the button on your tracker pixel and your phone rings, even if it's on silent. Go to thetrackr.com/Duncan to get 20% off any order. That's thetrackr.com/Duncan for 20% off. thetrackr.com/Duncan. Head over there and allow yourself to be as high as God wants you to be without worrying about losing anything. Thanks to thetracker.com. Check them out. Greetings to you, my swirling externalized bits of perfection protruding from the other side of the coin into the river of time that we currently call human incarnation. Welcome to the DTFH. If my voice sounds extra sexy, it's because I'm recording this at the Burbank Holiday Inn, a Taj Mahal in the midst of Burbank, a tower of glory, a beautiful radiant gem in the crown that is Burbank. And here I am somewhere on the fourth floor, gazing out at a beautiful parking garage and feeling the sparking glory of life swirl through my DNA, into my heart and up into my brain. And I'm splatting that out all over your ear holes at this very moment. Why? Because what else is there to do? Sometimes you end up next to a parking garage. Sometimes you end up next to some kind of silver scaled, novelty breathing, super intelligent basilisk. It just depends on what incarnation you take. But ultimately, they're all the same thing, friends. This podcast you're about to listen to is a dark one, if you ask me. It's a little bit on the dark side, and that's okay. They can't all be joy filled glory holes. They can't all be lubed up, emerald inlaid glory holes in some classy gas station down in Georgia. Sometimes they're going to be not so great glory holes with rotten wood and eroded spots where sizzling trucker cum has burnt through the wood. You know, those kinds that you end up at sometimes. But hey, you know, the point is this: what is beauty, right? That's the big question. I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about the idea of the cycle of time, right? And here in the West, you know, when people decide to go goth, they'll go to graveyards, wear black clothes, do lectures on cats, or give lectures on cats, or you know, buy pictures of, buy old, like, pictures of dead children and put them around their bed. And that's being goth, black lipstick sometimes, just a general aesthetic that seems to bend in the direction of decay, decomposition. And though it's not technically necrophilia, certainly there's this love of death there, but something in the high fashion of a classic goth in a weird way converts that darkness into something that isn't quite so repulsive. Is the rose life? Is the worm the existential realization that everything is impermanent? Or is he talking about fucking? I don't know which. Is the worm William Blake's little poisonous, cynical cock, and the rose some beautiful darling he's humping? I don't know if it's a lady. It could be anybody, anything. It could be his cat. I don't know. But the essence of the thing is he's converted his genius has converted his obvious despair into something beautiful. There's something really cool when people have the guts and the courage to dive right in to the deep, howling darkness, to lay among the black-eyed wolves of hell that prance and frolic in the forest of suicides in the depths of Dante's Inferno. There's people who decide to stare face to face with a great impenetrable void, who are not afraid to discard the pacifiers that maybe some of us use to reassure ourselves that there is something beyond the gnashing gears of oblivion that shall devour all life. There's something really cool about it when people really get face to face with it and down and dirty with it. And I feel like this conversation with Harmon, you're going to hear somebody who's super intelligent, who's kind of making the decision right now to plunge right in to the swirling, howling lich land that anyone can go to if they want to, and check it out and see what happens down there. The Valley of the Shadow of Death, the Dark Night of the Soul. I really enjoyed this podcast, and I love Dan Harmon, and maybe the problem when you're a super funny, incredibly creative person is that no matter what you're articulating, it always kind of sounds pretty cool. And even if you're articulating a really dark place that you're in, it ends up coming out in a kind of artistic way or something. There's something beautiful in it. And I think that's an interesting paradox, isn't it? That the very thing that's producing suffering, confusion, or fear when it's being processed by your biocomputer is coming out in a kind of graceful and sad way. So there we go. There's my preface for this thing. It was great hanging out with Dan, and I hope you enjoy this conversation, even though it might not be the most uplifting conversation you've heard. So we're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. Much thanks to Casper.com for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Right now, if you go to Casper.com/Family Hour, use offer code Family Hour, you'll get $50 towards the purchase of a brand new mattress. The Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. The product design features a marriage between foam layers for ideal firmness, just the right sink, and just the right bounce. That's baby making bounce. That's the quantum bounce that produces all life in this universe. It's an affordable price because Casper sells direct to consumers. Free shipping and returns to US and Canada. 100-night trial with free, no-hassle returns if you're not happy. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Based on Casper, Amazon, and Google reviews. Designed, developed, and assembled in the USA. Remember, if you go to Casper.com/Family Hour, use offer code Family Hour, you'll get $50 off this glorious mattress. Sweet friends, I sleep on a Casper mattress. What else is there to say? My body lays upon a Casper mattress. I make love upon a Casper mattress. I play Hearthstone on a Casper mattress. I sleep on a Casper mattress. I astrally project on a Casper mattress. The Casper mattress is my launch pad into the spirit world, and it can be yours too. Don't get hoodwinked by a mattress maniac at some mattress maze. Go to Casper.com/Family Hour. Use offer code Family Hour, and you'll get $50 off a glorious mattress. Oh, sweet darlings, are you shuddering in horror at the capitalist siren songs that are blasting out of my raspy lesbian voice in the form of these commercials? Then shudder no longer. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. For a mere $5 a month, you will have access to commercial-free episodes along with content that I don't put on the main feed. If for some masochistic reason you might want to hear me ramble about Burning Man for over an hour and a half, it's at patreon.com/DTFH with songs and random monologues and just a pile of beautiful, glorious, sweet audio gold waiting for you to plunder it. It's at patreon.com/DTFH. And by subscribing, you move us one step closer to complete and absolute independence. You bring us one step closer into the future. Patreon.com/DTFH. Thank you to all of you who have signed up. We are teetering on the edge of 500 subscribers. Maybe you'll be the 500th. Who knows? I hope you will check it out. Also, much thanks to you who continue to use our Amazon portal. If you go through the Amazon link located at DuncanTrussell.com, then anything that you pick up through that Amazon link, they give us a small percentage of. But man, you want to get some cool little configurations of plastic, you got to try out these Bose Bluetooth noise-canceling headphones. These things are truly like having an angel's mouth wrapped around your ear. If you've wondered what it's like to have two angels sucking on each of your ears in the night, wonder no more. Go through the DTFH link, order some Bose Bluetooth noise-canceling headphones, and you will no longer be accosted by the grating, glaring, horrible, wormy sound of the external world. You can block it all out as you lay in your sweet Casper mattress with tracker chips attached to your nipples and drift off into some kind of sweet, glorious daydream. Thanks for using the Amazon link, friends. We also have a shop located at DuncanTrussell.com. Well, lots of cool stuff there. All right, pals, that's it for me. Now, let's dive into this podcast. He's the host of Harmon Town. He also happens to be the creator of Community, the co-creator of Rick and Morty, and a million other incredibly brilliant, genius things, including Harmon Quest. He is someone I have an infinite amount of love and respect for. And now, everyone, please, really send out as much sweet, glorious love energy. Let's really do the experiment, man. I want to wrap this guy's heart chakra in 16 million pounds of protoplasmic, bliss-filled love biscuits. I want him to feel like a Jesus is shitting mashed potatoes made of miracles all over his body and face. I want him to feel as though his entire soul just went through some interdimensional super laundromat, all demons purged that may be in there except the cool ones. Let's send some sweet love over to today's fabulously brilliant guest, the magnificent Dan Harmon. Everybody,
20.
Hey, everybody. Check. One, two. Holy shit. My friends, if only you could see where I am. I'm in the home of Dan Harmon, and the vibe here is pretty intense, beautiful. We're in this, what do you call this part of your house?
This is the tavern.
He's got a tavern, man, and it's really nice. There's an aquarium.
Our friend Aaron McGathy made this for me, this tavern.
And last time I was here, I don't come here enough, you know? I wish I hung out with you more. But last time I came, we didn't have this beautiful aquarium. We didn't have... You've technologically upgraded or something. When did that happen?
Well, it's been happening over the course of 2 years. I've been trying to get this Crestron system working. It's not really...
A what system?
It's called a Crestron. It's kind of like 1989's most sophisticated home automation system. It's like a Bruckheimer-y kind of.
It is.
But I think it's been outmoded by the upcoming, like, as the Apple HomeKit stuff becomes available and upgraded, I think it's basically going to be a waste of a lot of money, what I've done here.
Can I pause this for 1 second?
Yeah.
So, man, this is the first time I've seen you in a few months. And, hey, Rick and Morty, doing great.
It's doing all right. Yeah. It had like a huge, if you measure things by Nielsen's, it went from like a 1.0, which I guess is high now. I got fired for getting like a 1.7 back in the NBC days, but like now I think a 1 point is high for basic cable, and it went to up to like a 1.5 between the last year's premiere and or last season's premiere and this season's premiere, which is a huge like gain because it was already a decently popular show for an animated show about like sci-fi and diarrhea.
But it's a religion now for people. Yeah. I went to one that signing. Remember that signing thing?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Whoa, dude.
Where I discovered that the perfect, like ecstasy is a perfect...
Yes.
Signing drug.
Yes.
You don't lie to anybody. You know, you're not... like, if you did cocaine and did, like, a signing, I think you might be amped up and talkative and stuff, but it would be like a false kind of thing.
Numb
like,
down.
But a little HDMI, what are we calling it
MDMA.
These days?
MDMA. Yeah, it opens you up.
Yeah, and it's like you're giving a fan exactly what they deserve, what they might expect if you and it's the truth. It's just like your thresholds are lowered and you're like someone shows you a drawing that they made, you can just honestly express how awesome it is that someone made you a drawing, you know?
I've never seen anything like that before, man. I've been to Comic-Con before, but I've never seen that happen before. Like, they were giving out these toys. I don't remember what they were called. Super cool. UFO. There was a UFO. It was, like, really cool, man. And you and Justin were sort of it was interesting because there was a ceremony to it. This is like a pattern that gets done. Clearly, it's like worked out. Like, here's how you do these things. What is the event called?
It was a signing. Yeah, at a toy store, a collectible store.
And the energy there was really interesting to me because it was people were talking in murmurs, as I recall. Now that being said, I think I was on acid and MDMA, but I remember it being like this. The sense of tension in the air and the feeling that this thing that you had created with Justin has jumped out of your whatever it is, it's jumped out of the petri dish and has now become a consuming religion for these people. This is serious shit for them, man. For you too, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's definitely crossed the threshold for me as of whatever deal we close for season 4, because I think now it'll finally be Rick and Morty will finally be worth enough money as a job that I could conceivably quit all my other jobs. I could like just focus on Rick and Morty.
And that's a dream for you. You'd like to do that.
Having one job would be a dream for me. Yeah.
How many jobs do you have right now?
There's probably like 11 things on my plate, like varying from like I have a book deal, but then there's other things like shows that I went and pitched with other writers that I'm like supervising them on. Probably like I'm just gonna guess like 11 things.
How many times are you checking your email a day?
I don't really check my email hardly. I check it like once a week. And I cringe before I do it because I know it's going to be filled with people kind of maybe yelling at me or something. Or just people, it's just things that are going to remind me that I am working too slowly on 11 different things. So my assistant is the connecting point between me and the world. So really emails are, I can check it once a week.
Are you a watermark for us? Should we like, is what you're doing the top of the pyramid, man, or do you feel more like you got trapped in something?
I think more, probably more the latter. I don't know, man. It's really hard to say. Like, I you're talking to a bona fide, as we've talked about on your podcast before, like, I'm a fucking bona fide, full on, not in a funny way, not in a cute way, workaholic. Like, I'm trying to shake that. And I don't know. So I on one hand, I want to say, like, well, this is the TV business, you know? Like how many more people are going to get jobs staffing on shows that pay proper guild things, and how many of those jobs, if you're lucky enough to get one, are going to last as long as The Simpsons? The TV has never been better, but that's because there's never been less money in it, and it's getting broken down into, you know, it's like an artisanal bakery now,
right?
Having a TV show, like, you can get one on Netflix or something like that, or you make your own, put it on the internet, sell it for $1 an episode. But the downside of that is, like, there's no long-term, like, retirement plan in that.
And this is something you think about a lot. Retirement, long-term stuff. You're thinking about that a lot, huh?
Yeah. I think that's maybe a Wisconsin thing, or, yeah, I probably shouldn't put it on my state. But, like, I just have this nightmare of, like, being a sucker and, like, living under a bridge and regretting, like, you know, like I don't know, like, I fucked up. Like, I just have this horrible fear of, like, some future where I have nothing. I've been so unemployed, right, and unemployed, right, up and down, yeah, you know? I'm sure you have too, like, that roller coaster.
Sure.
So it's like, the higher you get, the more you associate it with the lowest you've been, and you think about how fucking, you think about how little you expected to go from up to down last time, and then,
yeah,
you look at where you are now, and you're waiting for another plunge.
You know what we call that? That is the realm of the jealous gods. Do you know about this? The wheel of life? You know about this?
Mm-mm.
So it, like, represents different... Well, some people say it's an actual map of the cosmos, but obviously that's probably bullshit. It's more of a map of, like, psychological states. And so... There's this, it's like a mandala. So top of the mandala, the realm of the gods. Now, this is where anything you think you want, it comes to you. Like, we're talking, like, Rockefeller babies, I guess, or, like, people born into just some incredible, I don't even know if it's real or not that these people exist, but mythologically, this would be someone who is so deeply engrossed in sense gratification and having what they want and having their desires fulfilled that they haven't even come to the realization that this is impermanent. They're just sort of, like, glorified and glorious, and they're young, and they just hasn't popped into their head. The snake hasn't wormed their way into the garden of their minds to, like, whisper the dark story. And then it's the realm of the jealous gods. Now, you're not jealous, but in that realm, the gods start getting worried that they're not going to be gods anymore.
Mm.
And they fight each other. And that's where, like, that's where it gets really interesting, because the gods want to maintain this place of, like, opulence, but they know this is an impermanent universe. It's not going to last. It can't last. Your body won't last. The fucking economy could collapse. Meteor impacts. Who the fuck knows? Some unexpected disease. All the things. Your mind becomes plagued. And so then you're in a real predicament because you have all this wonderful shit, but you're, like, you're trying to, like, sustain it instead of enjoying it, you know? Which is then, and then the next one down is, like, I can't remember. It gets pretty bad.
Oh, God, it gets worse?
Yeah, it gets worse.
Is there a homeless god? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's funny to me, someone who's got a podcast. I got a podcast. I'm a podcaster. I do comedy. I got a podcast. And I worry. But it's fascinating, and I bet it's kind of interesting for people listening to think you, Rick and Morty creator Dan Harmon, also is experiencing these very same mental tribulations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's my biggest epiphany now, or rather, it's not even an epiphany. It's just like, I don't know, nobody wants to hear about the fucking election, just like nobody wanted to hear about, you know, 9/11 for 10 years after 9/11. But, like, as of the election, which was this, like, psychic shakeup, the, you know, becoming conscious of the what's been labeled white fragility, like, which I recognize as what I was like. I was one of those not jealous gods in a sense, like politically, because I was just like, I don't give a shit about politics. Yeah. I don't care. And then when it was like, holy shit, I recognize this is a fascist movement. Like, fascism is bad. Like this is a really legitimate, like, potential slide that our whole country could take. That's going to end up making me find out what I'm made of, which is the last thing I want. Like, I don't want to have to either A, play ball with some sick shit, or B, like, be in Antifa and, like, throwing rocks and stuff and, like chasing tanks and spitting and stuff. I don't have the chutzpah to, like, fight the power, and I don't have the chutzpah to, like, be like a fucking Nazi. Like, I would be a bad one of those too.
Well, you created two extremes there, and what you just mentioned.
And I like splitting the difference, which is what I was allowed to do as an elite liberal, you know, as part of the old regime, which I didn't realize I was a part of. But so anyways, long story short, like, you kind of waking up to that. Like, it has hastened the retirement urge. It's like, I you just want safety and comfort. How did this thought start?
It started with pointing out that, like, you know, the insecurity, the feeling of insecurity you're battling against.
Oh, right. You were saying that, like, people listening would be surprised. And I'm like, listen, if you're 25 and you're unemployed and all you have to do all day is, like, dick around with software and stuff, and like that's where I was when I was 25. And I know you've heard this 1,000 times before, but it's like I was at my happiest. Like, that, I'm 44 now. It's roughly 20 years later. And my foremost agenda right now is to get back to that place.
Yes.
Not by being unemployed, but I want to have that. I want to be able to get up in the morning and, like, make a 30-second cartoon and put it on Instagram and not read the comments and go on with my day and start learning how to do something else. Like, I want to just make shit. Like I was doing when we were doing Channel 101 and stuff like that. Only back then I was doing it out of, you know, kind of like I didn't have anything else to do. And so I wouldn't say I wasn't conscious of how happy I was, but I certainly wouldn't have said back then that I was as happy as I would ever get. But that's a fact. Like, there's comfort. You know, oh, my air conditioning works. Whatever. Comfort kind of just comes to you as you get older anyway. Yeah. But then there's happiness, and happiness peaks at, like, it just, like, surprisingly low levels. like the idea that there's more happiness out there than you can get, like, for $20 and 3 hours of a Sunday afternoon. It is actually, ironically, the thing I think that causes the most discomfort. Like, because you start flexing and tensing and worrying about how to get happier than that, and then you're just not in the moment. And we've talked about this in one way or another 1,000 times. But yeah, that's the zone I'm in right now. Is I'm like, okay, Rick and Morty could be a full time job. That means like I could, like, you know, stop this workaholic, cast a wide net, like, nonsense and multitasking and worrying about, like, 1,000 projects at once, and, like, kind of slowly pull back and, like, have one job, and then all the rest of the time be like, I'm not at work, so I'm following my bliss. And also on top of that, I'm lucky enough that the work is pretty blissful.
Here's a dumb question. Do you think of yourself as a revolutionary?
No. God, no. I think of myself as a coward and a I was in a Twitter exchange before I quit Twitter with some, I think they were democratic socialist people, and because they were talking about, you should be with us, you know, you should talk about us on the podcast or book a guest from us. And I was like, yeah, no, I want to have a guest from that represents you guys and talk to you guys, but I can't. I was in talking to them about why I couldn't join them yet. I was like, I've found a decent metaphor that's pretty accessible because Game of Thrones is such a popular show and there's so many characters on it that represents such a spectrum of like, I'm that Onion Knight guy. You know who I'm talking about? Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
That's who I feel like politically. Like, I'm just fucking scared and like tired and like used to be comfortable a long time ago. I'm tremendously loyal, but the things I've been loyal to have been shattered.
You haven't seen the thing. I mean, maybe you don't know. A lot of people don't even know. It's like there's a big secret bubbling on the planet right now. Most people aren't even aware of it. And that's a very disconcerting feeling, because what are you going to fight for? Some ambiguous, weird, fucking organized group of people on Twitter that's like, no, what? The dream. Here's one thing I have to fight you on, tooth and nail. This whole coward idea, I don't buy it, man. That's insane. I think you would take a bullet for your dogs. I think you'd take a bullet for a lot of people, man. You strike me as a person who would get pushed up against the wall and have your brains blown out rather than snitch someone out.
So yeah, why do you think I'm so scared? Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, there's things that I can't control about, you know, my ideology. Like, I won't be able to play along with certain shit, which is why I don't want that game to start happening.
What game?
The get in or get out fucking gigantic political movement where people are in some kind of jumpsuit and have an insignia and are doing fucked up shit to human beings. You know, it's already happening. It's just we're still at that point where we can kind of ignore it. I mean, you know, it depends on how much you focus your knob of like, you know, what you're going to tolerate and what you can get away with pretending you're not thinking about with other people. But, you know, they're starting to do it, like with this immigration stuff. Like, they're starting to kick people out
of
the country that are going to go, quote unquote, back to countries that they don't even come from, really. And they're going to get sick and die there.
Like,
we're starting to do it. And every time it's tolerated, you know, it's that old adage, man. It's just that old concept. This is what fascism is. It's like, it's a noose that tightens and tightens and tightens. And like, because I know that I there's only one of two things that I can do in the face of genuine autocratic overtures on, you know, like I can either like swallow down my vomit and like hate myself and like hide and play along and cover my ears in my mansion so I don't hear the screams of my housekeeper's family as they drag her into a black van.
Yeah. That doesn't sound fun.
That doesn't sound like something that sounds like something I'll probably would be able to do more than the other thing, which is grab a 2x4 with a nail in it and run out and say, leave her alone and get shot.
No, man, you are. Listen, here's the thing, man. I've got good news. The gospel. I come to you with good news, Mr. Harmon. There is something going on, man. And because with anything, it has to have its opposite, right? Wherever there's a thing. This is like some alchemical nonsense, but I do think there's some truth to it. Where there's a thing, quite often there's its opposite, right? And so when you see the evolution of fascism, which is what we're watching, and that's kind of what's so disconcerting about it, everything's disconcerting about fascism, but when things that suck evolve, when the monster mutates and becomes a little more nuanced, a little trickier, a little more like, somehow you can connect. You watch Bannon on fucking 60 Minutes, you know, and watch his little fucking reptile bulge thing start bubbling out, and you listen to him, and he's hypnotic, man. And you realize, dude, I don't necessarily agree with this motherfucker, but he is smart. And there's something beautiful about that kind of intelligence, that kind of like refined, dark intellect, and you feel the suck for a moment, the come to the dark side thing. But I'm telling you, man. The 2x4 idea, I don't think that's a very efficient way of dealing with it. And what if and this is something I believe, something I've witnessed, something I'm certain of, really smart people like you are doing far more insidious things to fight against this than running around with 2x4s. Like there's a counter movement that has within the continuum of it, I guess, groups like the Antifa, which are like doing what they can do, whatever. But that's kind of, it's not a good look. It's not a good look.
I don't know, man. I know that I like that look. I mean, I'm so grateful to kids that put on the bandanas and fucking,
oh yeah,
like scare the fuck out of
frontline. You know, their logic is. I remember like going back and forth with their logic in the beginning. The logic being, hey, you go and have a fucking intellectual conversation with somebody that if suddenly you gave them the ring of power, they would start the fucking camps up.
Yeah.
You go have the intellectual conversation.
Yeah, keep talking to these fucking assholes.
Go have a nice chat, do a little forum, sit down, let's get their point of view. I wonder what they have to say. Yeah. I bet it's different from the thing they always say that always ends up to people getting lined up and put in uniforms and incinerated in fucking camps.
Yeah.
When I say not a good look, what I mean is it's like, we need it, but maybe for someone like you, there's other ways to do it that don't involve putting on the bandana. And that's where my brain is at right now. Just because I've witnessed, the main thing I think is easy to forget is that what people can do in communities together, regardless of the state. That's the main thing. It's like the tendrils of the state get into your head. And then you start feeling burdened by the concept of the state and you're horrified by the state and you're glued to your fucking computer. At least I am. It seems like you are too. It seems like you got a little case of the fucking, this new form of like goddamn data influenza. And it's a new form of like, it's like any demon. They want to be worshipped, right? So like they always want your attention. They want you to like watch, stare at them. It gives them power, better for worse. I think groups of people right now of really smart people are actively working to subvert some of this shit, and they're doing it in a really smart, decentralized way. And the Antifa is probably one little piece of them, but there's a lot of other versions of it. I would just say there's hope. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go running around it's not about banging people with a board or something like that. It's like,
yeah, but I mean, the banging with a board, that 2x4 might be a metaphor for, you know, oh, this comedy writer has been suspended and fired, and this female comedian is being blacklisted. You know, it's like, shit like that's going to start. Like, there's 2x4s and not 2x4s that do exist, as illusory as that, as this data addicted like culture is. Like, that's another form of street, and in those streets there is going to be tests of will happening, because they're going to come for people and they're going to blacklist people. There's going to be encroachments where people either like stand together and go, I don't give a fuck if this person's joke was offensive. Yes, I'm a liberal and supposedly am accountable to some Roddenberry-esque like code of correctness when I address people. Like, I want to be woke, but that's different from saying I want this person to be, you know, persecuted because they had an off day and put their foot in their mouth while they were really fighting fascism, you know?
You're talking about, like,
I'm talking about Kathy Griffin, for starters, to use as an example. Like, are we going to keep on using the excuse that we can personally see why that's over the line to not back up a fucking woman who's being burnt at the stake? It's like, that's the trouble with this stuff, is like, if you don't acknowledge first and foremost when you wake up in the morning that we're at war, then, you know, every single thing that happens is going to get funneled into this like logical thing. Like, it's hard to articulate, but it's like,
oh, that's a good articulation. That's
the tough thing about war, is that you don't want to be at it. But once you are, at least then there's a shorthand where it's like, look, I give two fucks if the president's family was offended by this lady's joke. Don't care. I'm at war. Like, that's not, you know, it's like, but because all these tactics are being used in all these different streets and all these different theaters of war culturally, it's like, oh, so you, like, you're a bully and you approve of threatening the life of this and that. And it's like all this language that affects liberals because they want to be cool people. But I've just been advocating you know, for like, don't, no more discourse. Like, stop talking to these people. Stop having arguments. Like you know who they are. You know they're reptiles.
But we need to do something. I know what you're, I feel like there is a war. I don't like to use the word war.
Well, right. Because, and you, the reason you don't like to use the word war is because of that knot in your stomach that says these words are going to come back on you.
No, I don't like to use the word war because the word war is like love. It's a, it's too, it, the
too much commitment. What?
Too much. No, the cubbyhole is filled with way too many things and creates weird ideas that that maybe aren't as accurate.
Yeah, I mean, if there was another word for something where it was like, it's, but that's the trouble, is because the same reason it's a bad word and it's a bad thing to get into is the same reason it's effective, is because it is a state of mind that you go into regardless of outward evidence of where you should be.
It's I prefer the term revolution. Because the idea is that war is what they do. They do the war. They do the bombings. They do the war. They've got the fucking tanks, and they do the things, and they do the war. I think that what's happening all over the planet is that groups of people are getting together outside of the umbrella of corporations or jobs and learning how to sustain each other and just share with each other and to sort of de-commodify their shit. I think that's where it starts. It doesn't start with like, let's fucking, and not to say that you shouldn't like stick up for anyone who's being attacked, and that's a good thing to do. But if we can wrench our eyes away from Twitter and from the internet and figure out a way to like, one of my friends told me something I thought was really sweet. This group of people I like to hang out with now, one of the things he said is, and it's interesting because it matches what you were saying up front. He said, no one here is going to be homeless in this group of our friends. No one's going to be homeless. If someone needs help, we're going to give them what we have to help them. And if we need help, they're going to give us what they have to help us. And that's when the moment you start playing around with that kind of that kind of game with other people, then you instantaneously begin to subvert all the other shit that you're talking about. Because the idea is like everything's evolving. Fascism is evolving, but so is revolution. And what's the big problem with revolution, man? It's fucking centralized, inevitably. You get a Fidel Castro. Mm-hmm. You get a fucking Martin Luther King. You get a whoever the fuck, some leader, some charismatic fucking leader who gets shot and taken down, and then his deputies get taken down, and then the whole thing gets destroyed. So we decentralize. That's,
or even worse, it's successful, and now you've got a
leader,
a former guerrilla who's, you know, wearing a uniform, and he's in office. And
now we got a leader. Yeah. This is the problem. We've got a leadership addiction right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, anarchy is what I always recreationally was like. That's the only thing that works. It's like lack of hierarchy, decentralization. There's a million types of anarchy. Like every. Everything we've been fed about the word anarchy from the get-go is bullshit.
Yep.
People, it's a synonym for chaos in the fucking thesaurus, and that's because it's the scariest thing that power has ever encountered. I mean, before, you know, communists were the enemy, before even Nazis, it was like, remember that shit from history class where it was like the word anarchist was like saying Al Qaeda. It was like saying ISIS.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you were like Sacco and Vanzetti, is that those guys?
I'm not sure.
We're talking about in the 20s. It was like if you were an anarchist, if you could be branded an anarchist, you could be drawn and quartered.
That's
and
right.
No one would blink.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, just don't call me an anarchist too.
Yeah.
Because anarchy has worked in spots, you know, around the earth, like and every time it does work, tanks roll in and crush it and try to wipe it from the history books and wipe it off the map because it's a fucking threat. It's the idea that humankind is born free, doesn't need to be told what to do by another human being, and yet still cannot kill, doesn't need to, can work with his fellow man and like create communities. There's nothing about anarchy that says there needs to be chaos.
That's it.
It's like spontaneous, perfect human communal order that we are designed to have biologically and intellectually, and you know, like,
yes,
but
that's it.
You know, we got 8 billion people.
We can't worry about the 8 billion. We have to start with ourselves. That's how it goes down. It's like Ram Dass people always say this. We work on ourselves so we can help the people closest to us. So the 8 billion people, if we had a way to help the 8 billion people, well, we certainly would. No, you would do it in a second. If I thought dying right now, if there was some way to execute myself or incinerate myself, immolate myself, I'd do it in a fucking heartbeat, man. But that's not effective. It's not pragmatic. So what is pragmatic? That's the question. What would an evolved anarchistic revolution look like? And what it would look like is small groups of people just agreeing on a real simple, basic fucking idea, which is, hey, I'm not going to let you be homeless. If you shit hits the fan for you, you can come stay with me and I'm going to help you. That's a real sweet thing to tell your friends. You know, like sometimes some of us, especially out here, we get these fucking friends. Now, it's different for you because maybe you got to be more careful because of your resources. But we get these friends. There's a game people play out here, right? And the game is the friend who isn't doing that good. You know that game? That mm-hmm. game, the friend's not doing that good, right? And so you sit back and you're like, oh, they'll figure it out. It'll be okay. But they're really not doing good. They got fucking medical bills. They can't pay their rent. Things are going south for them. But we play this game where it's like, oh, they'll work it out. They'll work it out. You see them. They're fucking like taking sedatives. They're getting super stressed out. And you pretend. You're like, oh, they'll figure it out. They'll work it out. But they're getting sick. Now, there's a cool fucking thing you can say to your friends, which for some reason people don't say it much these days, which is, hey, if you need anything, you can have it from me. I'm going to give it to you. And the moment you start doing that, you subvert the whole fucking system, man. The whole system starts collapsing, not in like throwing Molotov cocktails, but in saying, hey, to the best of my ability, you can have my shit. Because I have too much of it. I've got too much stuff. Most people do. We have too much stuff. We're always like, oh, we got to redistribute the wealth. Well, if you want to fucking redistribute the wealth, start with your wealth. Do you need help? Here's some money. Let me help you. Come live with me. Shit, man. You could fill this fucking place up with people, you know? And that's exciting. That's exciting. And if you got sick of the experiment, Dan, send them on their fucking way.
Just kick everybody out?
Yeah, sure. It's an experiment. It's just like a fun little game. But that's where stuff to me gets pretty fascinating, is like decommodified groups of people sharing their resources for the sake of not a revolution, because that's so heady and goddamn, I don't know, ridiculous sounding, but more for the sake of chaos, the more for the sake of like joining together in a kind of unified group, just like you are with Rick and Morty, only instead of making a Rick and Morty, you're making outrageous momentary events in the midst of the flow of society for no other reason than the novelty of the thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's an acid test there, and that's why, like, earlier I said, like, I'm kind of waking up to my own bullshit, because what I crave is what I already had, which was part of a bullshit system of corporate hierarchy and ownership and stuff, because, and you know, some of this is going to be, like, overlapping paradox and stuff, because, like, because of my fear of, like, failure and homelessness and all this stuff. Okay, I've spent a long time, like, creating a financial empire, like, let's say a vocational empire or something. Like, so, like, then I imagine, like, okay, my 5-bedroom house is filled with Big Lebowskis or Small Lebowskis, like who are just shuffling around in their bathrobes and they're growing basil in the kitchen and and you know, lending out their services as graphic designers in exchange for medical care from doctors who accept apples as money. And but I'm coming home from fucking Rick and Morty, which I enjoy doing and which is a commune in and of itself.
Like, that's right.
Where these people have health benefits and they are making a cartoon to make people happy. And I'm sitting there at work and I'm like, I can't wait to get home to my empty house, my 5-bedroom house.
Yep.
That has too many bedrooms for me, so I can feel the space, be outside the sun, and like play Phil Collins and masturbate and like feel my power and my privilege.
Yes, sir.
So like,
I get it.
I can understand, like, if I, you know, to the manner born, like opening your largesse to,
to your community and being like, everybody come over to my place, which is exactly what would happen if there was an earthquake or
you already do it anyway. I've been to parties here
where the power went out, you know, everybody in this neighborhood, you know, is, you know, all of them are like my Uber drivers, like, cause down the hill is everybody that's ever driven me in an Uber. I'm sure they have like nice families, and if they ran out of water, you know, like, they can come here. I've got earthquake kits and I've got sparklets, you know, yes. back loaded, and I've got a Glock in case anybody gets out of line. And yep. and I'm gonna I imagine that scenario all the time, and I prepare for it in my head. Like, do I have enough food for 100 people that's not perishable? Do I have enough bullets to shoot everyone that tries to rape everybody? Do I have, like, I got to get a generator. I'm looking into, like, ham radio. Like, I'm a doomsday prepper, like, kind of in my head.
Dude, that's the best thing to be. And I'll tell you, man, being a doomsday prepper is a fucking blast. And this is, like, one of my favorite things about Burning Man is it's actually a prepper convention disguised as a festival, because what you've got out there is, like, camps of people in the middle of the most desolate, deadly, arid, inhospitable shithole ever. Not a shithole. It's a beautiful place. But it sure as hell isn't a place where life should exist.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who have figured out how to, like, build these camps and shade structures and solar panels. Not solar panels to create some kind of, like, life-sustaining thing. Solar panels to power speakers and to flash beautiful LED lights into the night for no other reason than because it's pretty. And yet, this is what the apocalypse looks like. Because in our mind, the apocalypse, the collapse, the thing we all feel coming, if you watch the History Channel, it's hilarious. Their depiction of it is hilarious because it's a complete misapprehension of the human spirit. People are beautiful, man. They're beautiful. And when you, especially like when you say the Big Lebowski thing, that's the horror. That's the horror scenarios. You end up with a bunch of fucking schlubs shitting in your fucking toilet, not flushing.
Well, I was looking at when I think of people being beautiful, that's what I imagine is schlubs. I mean,
okay,
I don't imagine like hardworking like yoga people who are very judgmental. And,
not yoga, you know. Not judgmental. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking hardworking for sure, but hardworking because it feels good to work. Like the thing that you are addicted to, you're addicted to it for a reason. You're addicted to it because it feels fucking good. It feels good to work. People love to work. And what feels really good is to work for people for nothing. To like be like, hey, man, let me help you build something. You know, we see all these videos of the, what is it? Not the Quakers. The, God, who are they? They ride around on the horse and buggies. The
Amish. Yeah.
The Amish. And they build each other fucking homes. And they do it in a couple of days. And you look at it and it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. You look at that and you're like, wow, what would that feel like to get together with a group of friends and build somebody a house? Not for any money, not for any kind of anything other than the fact that we're going to hang out, we're going to get hammered, and we're going to build shit together for each other for fun. That's beautiful, man. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I think that's something that is missing, intentionally hidden from us. Because, like, work for people these days, me included, it has been. It's changing now. But for some people, work for some people is like what sex is for a person who's been sexually abused. Because work is the thing that you had to do. You were forced into it, and you were obviously being exploited. It was no question about it. The exploitation's right there in the employee fucking handbook. Show up 10 minutes late, you're fucked. If you don't clock in at this time, you're not going to get paid. You're going to get a 30-minute break. Don't take too long to shit. Just pure, obvious, absolute, inarguable exploitation. That was what work is for a lot of people. Well, that's not really what work was supposed to be. Work's supposed to be like groups of us helping each other to make beautiful stuff with not for some like profit goal, you know? And that's when fucking work feels like coming, you know? That's when work feels good. This idea of a sober workplace, come on. That's insanity. You know what I mean? The concept that work is some kind of like sober endeavor that you get together in this formal way and you can't get hammered, you can't take psychedelics in work, you can't get together with a group of people and trip out in work. It's crazy. Like imagine a world where groups of people could get together get high as a kite and construct things together, but not for money, just because they love each other. This could be your home if you allow my Burning Man tribe to come live here.
No, I'm not doing it. I gotta shuffle around my five bedrooms and isolate. Like, I gotta log 10 years of the 70 I maybe get pursuing my bliss, because, like, it's too late for me. I already wasted so much time buying into the system.
Right.
And so it's like, I gotta just, like, I'm a fucking sucker spiritually and corporeally if I don't now just down convert the energy I've put into this life and into, like, some enjoyment of it. And it's, I don't enjoy working with other people. I don't, like, I've always been, like, an isolated, alienated, and alienating person.
Yes.
And I love, like, friendships, but I've never been good at sustaining them. I don't, like, I'm not, you know, I've just spent, like, a 10-year experiment, like, finding out the joy of collaboration, delegation, working with others, and all that stuff. It started with community, because I had to, like, stop being an isolated loner as a writer and start working with other writers, and I found joy in that, and, like, that chapter of my life is, like, roughly 10 years and kind of stops now, because I'm like, yeah, I don't like other people that much. Like I also, like, I need to get back to some of the roots of me, which is, like, I am alone, like, and don't function well with others, and like, am simultaneously lonely and, like, misanthropic and, like, but kind of loving it. Like, I don't know.
Look,
and, like,
man, I know what you're talking about. The fucking door shuts.
If I thought I had to come home to fucking people, I would just find a way to die at work.
I know.
I would just try. I would do your recommendation and take a drug and then grab a handsaw and be like, I'm going to start building for the joy, knowing that it was suicide. Because, well, I'd be like, I don't want to go home where Elmer is fucking going to talk to me about his fucking pot garden. I just don't. I don't.
Why? He's a great gardener, and he's a sweetie. But
I know, but you can't control when you do and don't get to see him. You
it's
know?
All just extremes. Like, it's all extremes. You got to create boundaries in community. I would listen. By the way, P.S. Man, I'm not like fucking Charles Manson over here. I'm gonna go back to my Brooklyn Park Slope apartment, veg out, play fucking World of Warcraft, listen to Phil Collins, and jerk off. Is that what you said, Phil Collins?
Yeah.
I'm gonna fucking do that all day long, all day long. It's not like I'm, because we're talking in extremes here. I'm just throwing out this concept of, like, how much of your suffering is, can you mitigate? How much do you want to mitigate? How much are you getting off on? And why is the suffering there? That's all. And I think for a lot of people, that suffering is, you know, one reason you might not want to be around people so much is maybe some of the people you're around suck.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a problem. Maybe some of the people you're hanging out with are, I don't know, annoying to you. Not that they're bad people, they're just annoying to you.
Yeah, but how annoying, how much freedom do you get in the selection of your relationships when you're, you know, when you're part of a commune? Like do you're there's a dark side to that coin, isn't there? Where it's like,
for sure.
Like,
yeah,
these people who, you know, they're like, they're fucking dishonest about it. Like, they use like, you know, revolutionary, open, trusting systems. You know, they see the fucking profit in it, and it's like, and then there's like this the thing is, if everybody could just read each other's minds and call each other out on shit,
everything would function like it would in a textbook conversation like we're having. But it's like, then there's just, I'm sorry, man, but there's fucking sociopaths out there. And some of them do wear bell bottoms and grow weed and like sell jewelry and even go to Burning Man. Like, I'm sure.
There's, I don't think so.
You don't think there's a sociopath at Burning Man? Oh, okay. I mean, you sold me on that. I was like, look, I'll back off of it. I've never been there, man. Maybe that's the whole thing. It's like, it's got somehow sociopath proof.
Oh, dude, it's 70,000 people. I mean, I don't know what the exact percentage point would be, but I would put it somewhere around what? At least like 5% sociopaths. Like, if I had to put money on the table, I'd say 5% sociopaths. And then like another like 45% people are just there to like party. But then like a lot of really smart people who are doing amazing work because of what they've found there. Like Elon Musk, for example. Who goes there regularly. The idea isn't like, obviously, the whole point of this shit is not like, oh, Dan, you must surrender your property to the community or anything like that. It's more like, start doing little experiments and giving shit away under your control and decision. And I'm sure you already do that, but it's like weird little like, just experiments with the boundaries you've created. It's like, have you tried jerking off to Phil Collins in front of a friend? You know, who knows? But the point is, it's like, I think we're talking in extremes here. It's just a little bit of like experimenting with a possibility that there might be another way to do this fucking thing. You know, the thing that, have you ever heard this before? Sick capitalism. When capitalism is sick, it turns into fascism. You ever heard that?
No.
Fascism is capitalism with a fever. So when capitalism starts feeling threatened and is freaking out, fascism emerges. So I guess the idea is to like figure out.
Stop. Those are my dog's squeaky toys for those listening. I'm gonna put this on a shelf. If you don't stop enjoying your God-given squeaky toy, I'm gonna fascist out.
Don't fucking control your dog, man. Radical acceptance. It's one of the Burning Man principles, Dan. All right,
squeak away, you little hippie. Squeak away.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just came out of this fucking thing, so my brain's all spinning and weird and like confused, but excited, because you kind of see what happens when groups of people get together and make shit not for anything other than the glory of making shit, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there anything, haven't you gotten a signal of defeat, though?
Defeat?
This last year? Yeah, like, haven't you, like, the way that we're talking, it's like, you sound like the way we sounded like 2 years ago, and I'm just like, yeah, but then this thing happened where, like, it was scientifically proven that way more of the world than we thought is a piece of shit and not worthy of our concern and really not to be trusted and this planet is in their hands and we're gonna fucking, you know, it's gonna start crumbling so soon that, you know, the best we can do is curl up, withdraw, go to our little hovels and like try to enjoy like some of the life that we have left.
You're gonna fucking make me play De La Soul for you, man. Hold on a second. Holy shit.
Fucking Trump language that I'm using on myself.
Yes, that's it. And if we're gonna fight this shit, man, we've got to start with our own self and notice that self-policing that we're doing. Dude, you're spraying these fucking verbal water cannons all over your soul every like six sentences here, man. It's like, what's going on, you know?
Well,
you're popping out fucking Rick and Morty. I mean, Jesus Christ, you guys, you seem to be completely underestimating the potency of novelty. Like, you want some kind of like, your idea of the thing is like, I don't know. I don't know what your idea of the thing is or how we fight the thing or what you do to fight white privilege or you fight the encroachment of the emergence of some kind of like neo-evolved fascism. There's lots of ways to fight it, man, but I don't think it's wrong to say that by blasting out big jizz blasts of awesome comedic novelty through the television into people's homes, I think that's some really potent shit that you're putting out there. And it is revolutionary in its own way.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Then I'll keep doing that. But that was my plan. I mean, that also happens to be the identical course of action for someone who has given up and who doesn't want to fight and who, like, just kind of hates the species. Like, I do the same thing by that definition. Like, it's also, like, the same thing I'd do if I listened to the shittiest people in the world. Like, fucking 15-year-old Nazis tell me every day I bother to read what they're saying, you know, to shut up and get back to work making Rick and Morty. And, like, so it's like, there's like these parts of me that are like, yeah, man, you fucking said it, brother. Like, yeah, like, fuck you and fuck your mother and fuck your fucking grandparents. Like, fuck everybody except for my grandpa who fucking stabbed Japanese teenagers with a bayonet so that I could fucking sit here and, like, remember being in an improv troupe and moving to LA. Like, it's like, fuck all you fucking little piece of shit kids. Keep consuming my bullshit and like, not understanding how to make it so much that I have job security for the rest of my life. And fuck you. Yeah, I will stop caring. You deserve me to stop caring. Like, you deserve to freeze in the fucking cold hell that you would live in if I did stop caring, and I would deserve every fucking dollar I'd make if I stopped caring.
But you can't stop caring. I don't think you, I mean, I don't know, man. You're not fooling me, Dan. It's like a, come on. I mean, I don't know. Who the fuck do I think I am? Goddamn, what am I, some kind of televangelist over here to try to cast demons out of you or something? And maybe you need to go through a dark existential period or something like that, but
I think it's like, for people like me, if there's anybody listening that understands this, it's like, nerds, like, on the playground, your first neural like patterns that are forming are a reaction to a fear of society, because society is a bunch of kids who are rhyming your name with something bad and like punching you in the arm, or but most importantly, like, kind of making you feel on a primate level that you could be kicked out of the whole species and like starved to death in the wandering the forest as a lone monkey. And like, you have that fear built into you. And then if you are one of the people that goes, okay, well, in spite of feeling like that, I'm going to focus then on like my rapping or my art, my shoe designing, my carpentry, my football skills. If you're one of these people that like goes, you know what? I'm not a fucking popular person. I'm afraid of other people. I think that society is kind of like a lot of dipshits. So I'm going to like focus on this thing I really like to do. And then when that thing, which usually has a lot to do with making people like you, we find, you know, you talk to every comedian, you talk to every athlete, you talk to every person that makes things, the story is the same, where they felt isolated and alienated and they had the love-hate relationship with society, and then they like went into this field where they ended up making people happy. And if you start making them happy, then if you're really lucky, you cross this other threshold now where you, what Campbell would call the meeting with the goddess, where you like actually get this thing you didn't even know you wanted, which is, oh, I do like these people. I like these idiots. Like, they're not so stupid. Like, I'm stupid in a lot of ways too.
Right.
And that's a goddess that I met with back when I started really, you know, doing my podcast and like somewhere within the, you know, community. And like before Rick and Morty, like somewhere in there, like when I got fired from NBC and went on tour and stuff, you can see in this stupid movie I made about myself, like me, like kind of like going, oh yeah, people aren't bad. Like they're like this feels good. Like,
yeah.
And then, so then I'm in this atonement with the father chapter where it's like, okay, you've achieved that relationship where you're like, you like people, you want to help people.
Yeah.
You know, so you're on your podcast, you're having people like come up and you're going like, who's in pain right now? Who needs help?
Yes.
And you're reaching out and you're like you're getting like your virtue signaling, as the Nazis call it. Like you're feeling good. You're like answering messages from suicidal teenagers in your Tumblr blog and
like you're connected. And you're like,
yes.
I can help.
Yes.
And then this shit happens. And it's like, it fucking sucks. It's like being in a relationship and then finding out someone's manic depressive, I guess. Like it's the same challenge. It's like, oh, okay, so you're sick. Like I didn't know that. I didn't know you were this fucking sick.
Well, then what?
I don't know. Like, I fucking want to break up. Like,
with humanity.
This wasn't on the fucking business card that you're bipolar. Sorry. I don't judge. I don't think you don't have a right to live. I'm not going to dismiss you as a crazy person. I don't. But you fucking like didn't. I only knew you for one poll, and fucking I'm disappointed in you now. I've watched YouTube videos of myself that were ripped from my live stream of my podcast by the alt-right, posted on YouTube, where it's me like yelling my frustrations about how we could even be entertaining the notion of tolerating Nazism within our country. And like the reason it's posted on YouTube is because I'm crazy, because it's an example of me being crazy, and all the comments under the video are fucking alt-right people arguing because they're fans of my show, whether or not I'm being satirical. And I want to fucking put a gun in my mouth.
Okay, let me explain something to you first. Number one, you're not going to put a gun in your mouth. We need you, whether you like it or not. Number two, you have to understand that the kind of manipulation that's been done to you, you've been infected. You know, man, you know about the fucking AI bots, right? know about that, right?
What? The fact that there's bots online?
Can we get a little creepy and woo-woo-y here? There's a great book by Nick Bostrom called Superintelligence, and it's all the pathways that humanity can take to reach a superintelligence. And it sort of like breaks down like, well, maybe we could figure out a way through genetic engineering to produce some really super intelligent human. But even if we had that ability now with like CRISPR, gene editing, some unknown Chinese technology, we're still looking at 21 years before we get our first fucking like superhero genius, you know, person, right? So obviously it's going to be AI. AI is the greatest threat that Elon Musk talks about. And everybody ignores when Elon Musk says this is the greatest threat. They ignore it. What he's really saying is it's going to cause a civil war. It's not going to like, it's not predators wandering around with fucking ray guns. It's going to infiltrate social media and produce false consensus. It's going to produce the illusion of there being a consensus that's not there at all. Now, as an example of this, imagine if you and I, and one day maybe we will, had access to 30,000 Twitter bots, right? That were like, even had a rudimentary AI. They were just programmed to like post memes or something like that. Maybe they could interact with keywords or something. But imagine if we had that kind of fucking power, right? We could produce a sense of reality in people who had made the ultimate mistake of believing that the internet was in some way a reflection of what's actually happening in the world. And if that happened, you could corrode, erode, and completely denigrate a fucking society by giving them the impression that the society they're in is far more virulent and horrible than it actually is. And it sounds to me that that's happened to you. You have been assaulted by the fucking bots, by the alt-right, as it's called. But we don't even know how many of those fucking alt-righters are real people. We don't know how advanced the Russia's fucking artificial intelligence technology has gotten. And you wouldn't know. This is what Bostrom talks about, is that when it happens, it's not like we're going to be like, hey, we did it, guys. We created sentient life that's way more intelligent than us. No one's going to say that shit. It's going to be done in secret. And so you have to understand that you're possibly... your assessment of reality itself is the assessment of someone who's been peering into some kind of like demonic mirrored wizard's cube that's warping consensus reality in a way that's making you believe things are a little more awful than they actually are. I guarantee you've been in fights with at least 20 robots.
I mean, yeah, on one hand, congratulations on joining the people that we hate the most in asserting that
life online is an illusion and not to be trusted. I mean, that's part of, if these bots are spreading any leitmotif, it's, that's part of it. It's
yes.
Like the word fake news is, that's what that means, is that don't believe, not only, you know, it's not just fake news in the sense of like CNN is lying when they say Trump is unpopular. But it's also like, therefore any libtard that, is arguing with you, if you are a person in a fucking lean-to shed with a Wi-Fi connection arguing with a liberal, you now have the option of saying, well, this person is deluded. Like, it doesn't, facts don't matter. Nothing you can look up matters. Statistics don't matter. Nothing matters. All that matters now is who you hate, what you hate, why, what your ideology is, and what contrasts it, and then you can't trust anybody. And
hold on. Let me
stop
you
there.
That's the
fog of war.
May I stop you there? Exactly, and it's one of the most devastating weapons that we've ever encountered.
But you're talking about it like almost like, oh, the bad guys have this weapon. It's like, no, this is a disease that called Carnival. You know, this is like, we all have masks when we get online. We all look like fucking bird people.
Yeah.
And we're all running around like raping and killing each other in jest. And like, none of us are assuming our real identities. I think that that's part of the big danger, is like, when Kathy Griffin gets online, she has a verified account. When I get online, my name on my Twitter account is the name on my birth certificate.
Yeah.
Like, I have 500,000 people following me.
Yeah.
They all know who I am, and it's linked to my business doings, my entertaining, my output as a person. And all 500,000 of those people, they're all fucking named Jib Jab 2020 and Stick It To You 69.
A lot of them are bots.
And fuck it. And even the thought that some of them are bots functionally makes all of them bots, because all of them are wearing masks. And what we're all saying now is the internet is a sewer. It is pumping poison two ways. It's not even an effective sewer. It's that sewer's calling it. It's giving it too much functionality. It's a poison system.
Yeah.
It's just veins filled with poison that are growing every day. New pathways to new cells, like new ways to get the poison to you.
Yeah.
And so, like, okay, great. Smash your laptop, throw it out the window, be as dumb as a flat earther, because everything's bullshit, and anyone that tries to tell you things that you don't want to hear is a piece of shit, and they're a robot, and they're fucking whatever.
Maybe they're a robot. There's ways to check, but there's ways you can tell. You don't know for sure. My point isn't like give up on the internet, or like, it's just to understand that like our assessment of consensus reality right now, the way we're getting it is through different sewer systems, essentially, which means that like, it doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. We certainly can, like, there are inarguable, undeniable facts. What I'm saying is, right now, the mood that you're in right now, which is I'm not going to call it despair, but it feels like it's somewhere right around there. It's like
I go for despair. That okay sounds good.
So like I would, so imagine fucking this weapon, man. Imagine this weapon. Just think about it. Let's just pretend as a thought experiment. You want to fuck with a goddamn country. You want to fuck with a potential movement. You're going to start with the people who have influence, right? And what's the number one thing you'd want to do to them? You'd want to make them despair. You would want to make them feel hopeless. You would want to infect them with hopelessness and despair, so that they would begin to spread that out and continue the work of spreading despair. Because if you want to fuck up a country, if you want to fuck up a civilization, make them hopeless. Number one, make them complete. Genghis Khan, classic example. Genghis Khan, one of the terrifying things that he did is he would like, in front of Genghis Khan, like a herd of fucking cows were people fleeing the Mongol horde. So suddenly you'd be in a city and people with like one arm, their eyes gouged out, people who'd gone H.P. Lovecraft level insane. They fucking drink the blood of the horse. They drink the blood of the horse. They kill everything. They kill everything. They kill everything. That was a weapon. So that by the time they got there, people were already like, we're dead. We're dead. We can't fight this fucking horde.
What are you saying? Those people were plants?
What?
Were those people
No, they had been intentionally terrorized, and they had been driven before this army with the intention of spreading more terror.
Well, yeah, you all, which brings us back to why I'm grateful to Antifa for fucking, like, scaring the living shit out of Nazis that should have the living shit scared out of them.
That's right.
Here's the page we can both get on that leads from my despair and your optimism and intersects it like an action item, which is something I've already kind of arrived at, which is like, for better or for worse, fair or unfair, cool, not cool, lovable, not lovable. Like, I can't, like, when I do get back online, a change that I have to make is that, like Justin Roiland, the co-creator of Rick and Morty, like probably, I assume, Lena Dunham, or like from what I recognize of her behavior online, like, she can't be somebody that reads a lot of fucking shit about herself.
Yeah.
Because people, it's a national pastime to fucking crucify her. So, like, I have to just, after a lifetime, and I was born on the fucking internet, I lost my virginity to a girl I met on the internet. Like, I was a kid who wouldn't be a functional member of society if it weren't for the internet.
Yeah.
Because it is the place where I was socialized. So it feels particularly a bummer to me, this fact, but because I am quote unquote famous, like, if I do use the internet, it has to be one way. I have to just get on Instagram, post a thing, and get off. I can't ever go back and read. And this sucks because, like, what I've been driven by is, like, you post a picture of you and your girlfriend, and I like seeing a 16-year-old girl who's just learning what love is saying, you guys are so cute together, heart emoticon, whatever, you know, like I hope to find a love like you guys one day. I like seeing 25-year-olds saying, like, I'm so glad you're happy. Like I like going back and reading the feedback. That's what I was getting out of Twitter. Like, I had retreated from Reddit because there was too much interactivity there on a level that was, like, so granular that I could get my heart broken there. But, like, so it's like, it's just like at 44, after a lifetime on the internet where I learned to socialize, I now have to become just like this loudspeaker. It's this out of touch fucking dude living on a hill who just gets online and posts a fucking cartoon of me dancing around in my underwear, doesn't give two fucks whether you like it or not, because that's my only recourse to integrity, and gets off. Like, I mean, you know, like, and it sucks, but
no, God damn it. Out of touch dude living on the hill. Fuck all that, man. But it's not right. You're not, like, as far as I'm concerned. And again, with all due respect, I'm a loud mouth and I'm overly confident. I'm probably dumb, but let me just say, man, you're off the beam there, man. You're off the beam. You've got to be on the beam. And every time you, like, talk shit about yourself, I'm sorry, man. I don't find you. I don't think when people think about you, they might think a lot of stuff about you. But one of the things they don't think is, that's an out-of-touch dude living on a hill. That's you saying that to yourself. And I'll tell you this, man. If I was around somebody that was...
I could produce 50,000 people right now that would tell you I was an out-of-touch dude living on a hill.
So what? I could produce... I don't give
What's your metric for out of touch?
I can produce one person who can tell you you're one of the coolest people on earth. That's me. I love you, and lots of us love you, and that's all that matters. Fuck the 50,000. No one gives a shit about them anyway. It doesn't matter. We're talking about person-to-person interaction. And the thing, and I'm not going to keep going on here because, again, I don't know how to, like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm getting really specific. I'm saying you're right spiritually, philosophically, and all this stuff. But, you know, I'm not going to be less than self-loathing within the next 10 minutes. So let's just accept.
Let's love the self-loathing. The self-loathing's beautiful.
But I'm just getting really specific in terms of mechanics and saying, like, the practical solution for me, short of becoming a Luddite and, like, oh, the internet is a fucking horrible place and blah, blah, blah. Like, I can't read what people are saying to me, which to me is a shame. Like, I can't look at.
Yeah, I get you.
And I don't know, you know, if you agree that, but I can't imagine that you disagree, because it's like, well, you can't stick your face in a fucking
hornet's
nest.
Dude, you're super famous. I'm not at the level you're at. Like, I get excited when somebody accuses me of being a fucking Satanist or something. Like, I enjoy it. It's like a joy. Or if when one of these fucking right wingers decides to start like attacking me or whatever, it's still like kind of novel to me. But if they were all swarming on me and ganging up on me, and also like,
I used to think it was fun when there was a fucking charming black liberal in the White House who was doing secret drone strikes, and that was the height of corruption. Like, like when a 15-year-old kid from Canada who isn't even fucking voting age or American is spouting Nazi shit at me, like, it used to be fun to me because it was an exercise in like, oh, here's a test of your powers, you know, like here's a continue to be funny and like have fun while you're like revealing this kid to be a clown, you know, maybe he'll grow up.
You gotta fight back.
Now it just breaks my fucking heart.
Okay,
like, so I'm done from the start. Like,
hold on.
If a 15-year-old kid is like spouting this garbage at me, I'm like. I'm not getting into it because I'm like, this is a fucking child and they fucking lost their soul.
Well, listen, okay, I'm just going to read this. I'm sorry, just let me read this to you. I can't, the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which I really like, because Arjuna is a warrior, which is a kshatriya, and his job is to fight. And the verse I love the most in it is when Krishna says, rise to the fight, rise to the fucking fight. This is a fight, man. This is what we all pray for. A noble, righteous war. A war for something that really matters, man. That really matters. Which is the people who you have temporarily decided to have a little fucking time off from. But the people matter. The people are beautiful, man. You haven't forgotten that. It's just like if you're around, like, if you get in the LA traffic too long, you start forgetting that, man. People are fucking beautiful, and the communities are beautiful. And you know, actually, I just saw this talk, this guy Bruce Damer, who's this fucking brilliant astrophysicist. He's going to be on the, I think he's on the front page of Scientific America this month, but he's discovered this like theory on the origin of life that's like really interesting and kind of changing stuff. One of the things he talked about is how the way we've thought about evolution is the survival of the fittest, right? But as it turns out, it appears that it's actually evolution is related to the functionality of communities working together. That's what makes things progress and advance. And that is, in fact, where life probably originated from. So I don't know, man. When I see like this, I just think, you know what, man? You got to just fucking fight. Even if it doesn't, you don't feel like it. Even if you don't want to fight, who cares? You just do it for no reason at all other than it's the best choice.
All right, but look, not only is the functionality of communities not a contradiction of the standard Darwinian model, because all that's saying is what we already knew, which is that multicellular organisms are going to be able to eat unicellular organisms. Also, that's the most terrifying fucking thing, is that if you extrapolate that like thought, you arrive at, so therefore what we're at a war in for right now is like, what are the communities that are going to survive? And even though there's anecdotal evidence that anarchy works better and people are happier within it, the larger historical empirical evidence is that communities based on fear and hatred and need and being outside the moment like attract more cellular organisms into multicellular organisms that eat the other fucking ones.
What?
And like hatred wins and
look
fear wins.
How much hate's in a beehive?
All those motherfuckers got stingers, man.
No. Everyone's they're lovely.
And they're all, if you go be a bee and go into that hive and see how much fucking conversation they're having about
Dan,
fucking and sucking.
Dan.
They're talking about whether or not something needs to be stung.
They're not.
Yeah,
Dan.
They are. They're fucking fascists. They're insects. There's nothing more fascistic than an insect colony. What are you talking about?
Dude,
it's pure hierarchy,
it's
fucking, and fucking biological designation enforced by murder.
Oh, no.
What are you?
I've never been more offended by anything in my life. You are calling bees fascists?
Are you fucking kidding me?
You've never seen a bee in a flower dancing around? Does that look like a fascist?
Dude, flowers don't look like flowers to bees. No, flowers look like
cathedrals. They look like temples.
Yeah, and they plunder them. And the flowers are having the last laugh because they evolved first.
They don't plunder them. The flowers give them their fucking soul, and they dance in the temple of life.
You're talking about a beautiful relationship from our perspective. That's like if you were out in space as an alien watching Hitler move across Europe and going, look at the shimmering light off of their fucking pointed helmets.
I guess the Jews are pollen. They're gathering pollen from the dust. No, I disagree with you, man. I think that I think right now experientially, there's some severe places we differ, which is a whole other podcast altogether.
Well, yeah, your love of insects.
Well, I fucking think bees are beautiful.
Well, I think they're amazing. I'm fucking fascinated with them. But you really want to be a part of an insectoid society? Are you? That's what we're striving toward.
I didn't
toward.
Say I want to be part of an insectoid society. What I'm saying is, this is what I think. And this is, I know you disagree with me here. And that's okay. Because I think even though you disagree with me here, you might agree with me on another point. I think that what you are is a super intelligence that is coming through this sort of, I got that. God, someone told me this great word. Let me see if I can remember it. Oh, it's
cuck.
Yeah, cuck. You're a cuck. That's what I meant to say. The whole point of this podcast is to tell you you're a fucking cuck, man. Come on. What's wrong with you? Fucking he's president. Get over it already. No, it's called, extantiate. Have you heard this word before?
Extantiate.
I don't know if it's a real word. Somebody who was giving me DMT told me this word, but extantiate is this idea of what you're doing, which is that you are extantiating yourself out into time. So you are what you could call the Harman continuum. And because you've existed, you'll always exist. You're like, to use insect terms, which I'm very fond of, an ant that has burrowed through time with all of your actions. And this has created a permanent kind of loop in time. And so that you extantiate yourself into that loop. And that's what you're doing right now. And you, if you wanted to, you can do it again and again and again and again. It's a kind of Nietzschean idea, only instead of it being a circle and a kind of nihilistic endless, if you have had more suffering than joy in your life, then you must be in hell. It's a cyclical thing, which is you're polishing yourself right now. Your consciousness is flowing through this thing, and that thing that it's flowing through is the Harman continuum. And so the idea is you're polishing your rough edges right now. You're polishing it down. That's what you are. That's what a bee colony is. That's what a fucking athlete's foot is. That's what it is. It comes out into time, and its source, as far as I'm concerned, is love. It's love. And that thing you were talking about, oh, I'm virtue signaling because I'm healing people. That's not virtue signaling. Virtue signaling is to announce some fucking fashionable attitude in the hopes of winning mating rights or something like that. That's virtue signaling. What you're talking about is the primordial impulse, which is the thing flowing through you into time. And that's the impulse to heal. That's what we're here for. We heal. We heal ourselves. We heal people around us. We might suck at it. We might go crazy for a little bit. We lose ourselves. We get fucking desperate and sad. We might commit suicide a few times in the cycle. Who the fuck knows? But ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, the number one transcendental cause is to heal. To love, and it's a pre-linguistic impulse. It precedes language, and that is what we do. And when you forget that, you get fucking depressed and sad and upset. When you remember it, things start sparking again. The synchronicities start happening. And that's what the revolution is, if you ask me. And it's something very worth dying for. And bees are not fascists.
I think bees are textbook fascists.
Hey, dude, you're a real buzzkill.
But yeah, no, I like that a lot. I like that image. When you're talking about that, I kept thinking of the image of one of those, what do they call those things in the 70s? Those spinny ink things where you touch a marker to a spinning.
Yes.
Piece I know what you're talking about. They're awesome. Spirograph.
Yeah, Spirograph.
Because it's it just has to do with the relationship between your subjective experience of standing still or being an individual, for instance, having one lifetime or however you want to look at it, and how the pen can think that it's holding still, or but that everything simultaneously can come back around to you, but also you can change the path.
Yes.
You know, that you're like the idea of creating an ant tunnel, boring it out, and your every shit you take, every egg you lay, every piece of food you find, store, digest, whatever, every fart you lay, every shoring of every tunnel, like it has this sort of like echo effect where
yes.
you're going to end up living life again.
Yes.
You're going to be, you're part of the energy that is the universe, whether you're just out and out believing in reincarnation, like I'm going to be a koala bear next Tuesday, or just more in a more grounded sense that we are all energy and we're going to die and become energy. That's like the energy is somehow connected to our intelligence while we're using it for intelligence.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're somehow like, even though matter can't be created or destroyed, like thought can, and that's an end run around physics.
That's a what?
An end run. Like it's like cheating the system. Like,
yeah.
Where, because like you can't create or destroy energy or matter,
right.
but you can create and destroy thought.
That's right.
You can create love.
Yeah.
You could destroy love.
Yeah.
We know that
yeah.
for a fact. That's something we can be an expert in. Like
yeah.
we don't need to like go to college to know that you can
yeah.
make love and you can kill it.
You can kill it dead.
And so that if you believed in a link between the energy that we are, that we occupy while we're alive, and the thoughts that we think while we get a shot at life, and then think to yourself like, so how much of your of that energy that made you was connected to love?
Yeah.
And then you die, it breaks down somehow, possibly through intelligence, like there's this growth of love.
You pop back into the frame. It's like,
well, really, it's like you could just, if instead of love, you could just say existence. I mean, just the,
sure.
the thing that wanted to be instead of
we
not
like
being.
It here,
right?
And
we
you
like to be alive.
You like to be on this side of the coin,
right?
And that's why you're here. You're like an inflatable, essentially, and you inflate yourself out into this particular incarnation, and you do it over and over and over again out of a form of attachment.
Yeah.
And so that's why you're here.
Because suicidally depressed people. Like they can either say, when you get to a point where logic says you may as well be dead, you can do one of two things. You can kill yourself or you can shoot up a McDonald's. Like, and
yeah.
you may as well do both. Like, and so that's evil. Like it's not you being evil, it's you being a vessel of evil. Like, you've been taken over by cynicism and nihilism.
That's
and
right.
To a point where, like, you're a vessel of decay.
Well, you've become matter. You've basically become part
of... You've become the kind of matter that tends to grow cancer physically, like
yeah.
medically, like a body that isn't on the side of life.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like you're,
it'll start shutting down, maybe. But even if it does, even when you get cancer, you can die in this incredibly graceful, beautiful way. The point is, it's like what's happening is.
I don't mean to imply to people listening that have a tumor that I'm one of those people that thinks that you got it by being a bad person.
Yeah, no, I think people listening who are dealing with cancer understand what you're saying. But the point is, like, the beautiful conjunction that's happening here is between matter and soul, if you ask me. And soul is an easy word; it's a lazy word. But a better way to put it is, it's the consciousness. It's the consciousness is the river. The Harman continuum is the riverbed. Consciousness runs through this riverbed over the course of millennia, repeating again and again and again and again. And whenever you forget and become the riverbed, that's where shit starts getting really depressing, because you become a product of habit. You become a product of, like, you don't realize that you've been sent here like a medic on the battlefield. You decided to pop into the Harman continuum yet again. You've probably been doing this a lot, man. Like, they say we've been doing it for, like, an incomprehensible amount of time, thus the deja vus, even though people say that's an issue of photon receptivity or something hitting your eyes, I don't know. But the reality is, you've been coming here a bunch. You like it here. When you die, you come back here. And this you that you are right now, maybe, lots of dead Harmon ghosts are jumping into this frame right now because you like to be in this frame. That's what you really are. It's transcendent to matter. That's revolutionary. We can't really have a successful revolution if we're caught up in the idea that we're just matter. You can try, but we need to decentralize. And to truly decentralize, we can't have something based on the necessity for the physical form. We've got to be willing to die.
You also can't base where you place your pen in the spirograph on where the pen's been, because then you get a deep, dark, paper-tearing, shitty...
runnel.
We call it a
runnel.
Just a fucking shitty, dark trench line. Like you could start bright orange and just it'll still become gray and shredded. Yeah. And you move the tip of the pen, there's instantiation.
Yes!
Like you broaden out. And you have to do it at key moments. You take your cue from, oh, there's a revolution happening. I'm going to fucking draw all the Harmon ghosts to this front of the war.
Yes!
And go, hey, over here, I don't give a fuck if I live or die. And that's you evolving.
Praise God. That's not only you evolving, that's you like evolving the actual part of the time-space continuum that you're in. And that's fun, man. That's really fun to do. That's what we do. And that's what like the thing that you're talking about, the dark place where the pen's been running a lot, it produces a trench. And the trench produces gravity. And the gravity produces compulsion and habit. And the habit produces the endless cycles of suffering. So it's like that moment that happens when you're right about to get in the fucking fight with the fucking person that you always get in the fight with. And that's the runnel, you know, and you always get in that fight. Every single time, you always get in that fight. Every single time, you're always right. You're right. And you are right every single time. But the moment you go, okay, wait, I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to let him win.
Right.
Damn, bam, the pin jumps off that fucking runnel. Now you've entered into an entirely different universe.
Yeah.
You've moved into a different cycle, a new place, a magical place.
I mean, a regular psychologist would just call that neuroplasticity, which is like what my therapist called. Like, you're basically like, you're going to junctions of behavior and you're bothering to stay there instead of taking the road most traveled.
Right.
Neurologically, you can, and then you form new habits.
That's
it. Like, you go, well, this is where I always pour a drink. So if you were trying to solve drinking, like you stay there and you're just conscious of it. It starts with awareness and you go like, well, this is where I always pour a drink. This is where I always pour a drink.
This is where I smoke.
So I'm going to chew a carrot stick. I'm going to do jumping jacks. I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. I'm going to wait and see what any other behavior forms out of this moment.
Yes.
And you can do that with any moment. It doesn't have to be addiction related.
Every
or
moment.
Habit related. You can like actually literally spend every single moment being aware of the moment.
Yeah.
And then instead of taking the road that has been most traveled, every single moment like is afforded a chance to have a new road formed from it.
And a new universe.
Yeah.
A new dimension, a whole new place. You enter into a whole new realm. And that's when the synchronicities start popping. So, man, I love you, Dan. I really appreciate this time I get to spend with you. It's weird. Most of our conversations have been recorded, but I'll take as many as I can get.
Well, I was thinking about that earlier, and I was like, well, actually, it's becoming kind of a beautiful thing, isn't it? That like everybody that knows either of us can trace our friendship through recorded media.
Yeah, it's so weird,
like,
man.
We've barely spent any time. Like, it's probably like 70% of our time has been
recorded,
spent, broadcast.
It's beautiful. I'm so glad to have this time with you, man. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Fuck you.